Been a very emotional day for millions and millions of Americans. The first thing that they did today was they flipped on the Fox News channel, turned on the corporate media, started their coffee, started witnessing the ceremonies of the inaugural day here in America, where the transfer of power, the beautiful transfer of power, took place as Biden is out and the 47th president that was sworn in earlier today is now Donald J. Trump. He is the 47th president. He is the sitting president of the United States. All of the hubbub is out of the way. The campaign, the debates, the attempted assassinations, it's all out of the way. And now it's time to get down to business. The first thing that millions of Protestant evangelicals did this morning was they rolled over onto their nightstand. They took their smartphones off the charger. They started perusing X and other social media platforms and just celebrating. The man on the white horse has arrived. We have been certified plan trusters in full. The military has been in control. The white hats have been in control. Donald Trump has regained the reins, and the levers of power are in his hands as we now can re-liberate this country and rid it of the tyranny that we have faced over the last 4 years. It's time to close down our borders. It's time to militarize our borders. It is time to start the mass deportations that are critically necessary in this country to restore it to its constitutional republic foundation under God that it was founded under. But you know what the problem with that is? None of that is true. Millions of Americans just waited with anticipation on the edge of their seats, waiting for the very first words that President Trump would utter would be the order or the announcement of his executive order that would grant clemency and a blanket pardon to every single January 6th patriot that's being unconstitutionally, unlawfully, and without due process held as prisoners of war on U.S. soil in gulags somewhere. That very important, very critical order of business was mentioned exactly zero times by President Trump. I'm not trying to blackpill you. We told you all of this. We gave you very fair warning that all of this would take place and that none of this would happen. Those patriots that went to the Capitol on January 6th to petition their government to redress their grievances, to exercise their First Amendment right to peaceably assemble, that was turned into a kill box by the subversives that now occupy our government, our society, and governments across the West. Those people remain in the gulag with no mention during the inaugural speech by the 47th president of the United States, who campaigned on the promise that he would issue a blanket pardon to January 6th prisoners of war. Didn't happen. Millions and millions of Americans with heightened emotions today as they watch the ceremonial events take place. The first person, by the way, to pray over our country and to pray over the newly sworn in 47th president of the United States, of course, was a Jewish rabbi. And then solidifying my position about why you never hand a microphone or give a stage and an audience to a black, that was the second prayer over the 47th president and over our country. Didn't include Jesus Christ, by the way. Now, of course, the rabbi believes that Jesus Christ is boiling in a pot of excrement and semen and that his mother Mary was a whore. He didn't mention that, but that's what it takes to become a rabbi. That, and of course, sucking the blood off of a newly circumcised baby. So a rabbi was first, and then a grandstanding black gave us a rap performance dubbed as a prayer. And then, of course, we had this transgender-looking thing, maybe a lesbian female posing as a male Catholic priest who prayed over our country and prayed over the president. And of course, failed to mention Jesus Christ. Of those three so-called prayers in a Christian-founded country, a country founded and built by whites, no mention of Jesus Christ. And speaking of whites, of course, during President Trump's thanks section of his speech, he made sure to first thank blacks and then thank Hispanics for their votes that secured the election for President Trump so that we could get into what he referred to as the golden era of America. He did not thank you. If you're white, he did not thank you. That's what transpired. But emotions are very high. It's time to get down to business. Militarizing our borders. Rounding up. And in mass fashion, deporting the illegal savages that have invaded our country. A military operation that will sweep from coast to coast, rounding up and deporting. Mass deportations of all of these criminal invaders who have turned our cities into cesspits from hell. Drug-ridden, crime-ridden, dangerous, violent places from hell. We will round them up and we will deport them. That wasn't said either. This country is in desperate need of mass deportations, the immediate militarization of our border, the denial of any entry into this country. That must happen if we're serious about being a country and preserving our heritage and preserving our future. That must happen. It's not a possibility. It's not something that could be suggested as part of a plan to return our country to its state of freedom, to return our constitutional republic to one that promises individual liberty to its citizens. No. That is necessary. It's a required ingredient in the recipe for success. Nothing less will cut it. Nothing less will do. Nothing less will save this country. We must bring home all of our troops, militarize our border, and use the rest of them to round up the freaks who have invaded this country and turned it into a modern-day Weimar Republic. In an unprecedented move, I think never done before, we'll have to check on this. Can you guys check and see if this was the first time? Preemptive pardons were issued by Joe Biden to Tony Fauci and General Milley and, of course, all of the Biden pedophilic crime family. Does that hold up in court? Is that really a thing? Can you actually do that? Somebody's got to look into that. Can you actually say that, yeah, preemptively, we're going to admit to committing crimes against humanity and the sex trafficking of children and rampant pedophilia and the molestation and the grooming of our kids and the open declarations of war that we have made on the American citizens by injecting them with a bioweapon that was released, that was manufactured at Fort Detrick in a DOD operation that you called COVID-19? While you took kids out of school, put Sharia face muzzles over their faces, oxygen-inhibiting, bacteria-ridden face muzzles, removed them from their parents, took them out of school, subjected them to whatever they wanted to download into their brains off of their Chromebooks during home learning. These people need to be indicted and tried, and when convicted, fried as the war criminals that they are and the perverts and pedophiles that they are. But instead, we're just moving on. Donald Trump doesn't want to live in the past. He wants progress. And so, yeah, we're not going to talk about prosecuting these war criminals and these savages who target our children and who have locked up patriots for the crime of dissenting against a stolen election. Among other things, gathering at the People's House. Being escorted in by people posing as police officers wearing badges and guns before methodically executing, murdering four unarmed Americans on that day. No accountability mentioned about these people at all whatsoever. Because this is what Trump was paid $100 million to do, and he's going to do exactly what he was paid to do with his Jewish Zionist cabinet and administration. That's what he's going to do. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm not here celebrating any of this. We are here to discuss remedy and a final solution. That's what this platform is all about. So yes, for many people, a very emotional day. A very celebratory day for millions of MAGA enthusiasts and Protestants and evangelicals and lukewarm Christians in this country. What a gloriously emotional day. Melania Trump looked like she had been kidnapped and was being held against her will. We were covering the event. Yeah, this is the 6 million D chess that Trump has been playing. They're all in one room. If you were reading Real Raw News, you probably thought, hey, this is the moment right now that we've all been waiting for. They're all in one room. All of the pedophiles, all of the perverts, all of the subversives, all of the terrorists are finally all in one place. We're just waiting for the military who has been in control and the white hats who have been in control to come marching into that auditorium and take all of them into custody. For President Trump to say, thank you for being here. You're all under arrest. But we're here to deal in facts, not fantasy. We're here to talk about real truths and the reason why these people are getting away with these things. And that's because of the Talmudists who have now paid Donald Trump $100 million and they intend to get their shekels worth. So we're going to talk about topics that matter. Maybe some topics that get people to react emotionally, but we're not going to deal with them from a state of emotion. I already argue with Jesus Christ about my anger every day. The King of Kings, my Lord and Savior, who was not mentioned during any of the three prayers delivered by a rabbi and a black and a lesbian posing as a male in a Catholic priest outfit. And very few topics, very few events make people as emotional or emotionally irrational as the so-called Holocaust. This is the event that you're just absolutely not allowed to question. You can go to jail in certain countries. You can be sentenced to death for denying the Holocaust. And Donald Trump has said that he would advocate for the death penalty for anti-Semitism, and that if you don't support Israel to the hilt, unquestionably, then you should be deported. But you're not allowed to question the Holocaust. The big bad event that we've all been told resulted in the systematic murder of 6 million Jews and millions of others who got in the way. The event that none of us are allowed to investigate, none of us are actually allowed to look into with any real intent, because the second that you do, you'll realize that the entire story is bad. If you start really breaking things down, if you start really looking into the things that we have been told, that we have been told that we're not allowed to question, that we have been told that we're not allowed to criticize or critique or investigate, if you really look into that with pure intentions, then you'll learn pretty quickly that even the most surface level claims of all, the claim that 6 million Jews were gassed and murdered and had their remains burnt and hidden all over Europe, isn't just fake. But it's impossible. It is impossible. Humanly, scientifically, physically impossible to gas millions of people to death with Zyklon B, which was used as a delouser by the U.S. military, among others, specifically because it doesn't kill humans very easily, and it's impossible to burn all of their remains and make sure that they're never found, especially when we're only talking about the handful of German crematoriums that we are told existed. We're just supposed to believe it. We're supposed to believe that for roughly 5 years, as the Germans fought a multi-front war against the entire world, as the German people starved to death in the face of the biggest war and supply line crisis in human history, that somehow, some way, they managed to seamlessly just kill off millions of Jews because they hated them. And then destroy all of the evidence. And then surrender and admit to the entire thing. and then spend the next century giving billions, trillions of dollars worth of reparations to any Jew on earth who claims to have ever known somebody who's been victimized by a German. But again, none of it adds up. Not at all. We've talked about these numbers before, but it's worth going over again because all of this is so important to the narrative that we have all grown up with. Complete and total lies. Jewish fantasies about the Holocaust have been at the center of every single geopolitical struggle that the world has faced for the past 80 years. We're always told about the 6 million. But it's fake. And it can easily be proven fake by looking at Auschwitz alone. You don't even have to dig into the other camps that we have been told so much about because the lies at Auschwitz are just so egregious, so over the top. For more than 45 years, the world was told that over 4 million people died at Auschwitz, but they didn't. It was a lie. Back in 1992, the Chicago Tribune reported on this. The report read, in part, quote, "Gone now from the memorials at Auschwitz are the 19 inscriptions that said in 19 languages that 4 million people died here. The memorials are blank because they were wrong. Jewish and Polish scholars of the Holocaust now agree that the Auschwitz death toll was less than half of the 4 million cited here for four decades. The actual number was probably between 1.1 million and 1.5 million. End quote. In the same report, the Chicago Tribune went on to say that the claims of more than 4 million Auschwitz deaths were, quote, a myth created by Poland's communist leaders, end quote. Now, that's not to say that people didn't die. It was a war. It was a world war. Of course, bad things happened on all fronts. But as it relates to the Holocaust, it was a myth. Not just Auschwitz. All of it. And just in time for the conversation that I wanted to have with you and with our guest today, this cool little map was put out on social media just a few days ago, marking all of the so-called concentration camps that were liberated by the Rothschild-run Allies in the closing months of World War II. Amazingly, all of the camps discovered by the Americans and other Western troops were simple labor camps or prisons full of communists and full of pedophiles and full of other disgusting subversives that any reasonable person would put behind bars or maybe just put to work. But of course, if you ask the Bolsheviks, they say that they discovered a bunch of death factories, places like Auschwitz. And in these death factories, they tell us that they were filled with gas chambers, filled with torture dungeons and masturbation machines that would jerk you off to death. Every single one of these death camps that we're told the Germans were operating during World War II, where they were marching a bunch of helpless Jews off to gas chambers with wooden doors, were based in territories that were ultimately taken by the Soviet Union, a group of Jewish-run communists who we know for a fact lied about everything, including about the United States, for decades, up until the very end of its existence. But on this one topic, on this thing alone, we're supposed to just take the word of a bunch of communists, a bunch of people whose comrades were run out of politics and other influential positions of power by Hitler's National Socialists, the only people on earth who would stand up to them. And when you look at the map, it gets even more obvious. These death camps were discovered deep inside of Eastern Europe, where the Western Allies wouldn't tread for another 50 years. So yeah, of course, the Soviets and their Jewish propagandists had plenty of time to make shit up. And nobody to challenge them. And anyone who did challenge them, they'd get thrown in a gulag. Or killed. Not unlike, at all unlike, the governments of modern Europe where simply asking questions about the Holocaust can get you thrown in prison for years on end. Much like what happened to our good friend Germar Rudolph. Germar is a native of Germany who's lived in the United States for decades. He's a chemist by trade. He's used scientific background to debunk the claims of communist propagandists and Jewish race hustlers. And for doing that, he's paid a heavy price. Back in the 1990s, Germar published a series of reports disproving longstanding claims of gas chambers at Auschwitz and other Holocaust impossibilities. And as a result, he was convicted of inciting racial hatred by a German court and sentenced to 14 months in prison. Later on, despite his marriage to a U.S. citizen, his American residence, and the fact that his child was a natural-born U.S. citizen, none of that mattered because Germar was arrested in New York and deported from the United States for the purpose of going to prison in his native Germany for the crime of scientifically disproving the Holocaust narrative that has been weaponized against the German people and white people in general for 80 years now. Well, after spending 2 years in prison, Germar was released and returned to the United States, where he has continued his work, thank God, including on books like the Holocaust Encyclopedia. Germar has appeared on a number of different broadcasts, including this one, talking about his work and the litany of historic and scientific facts that back all of his work up. And that, of course, has made him the target for the very same Judeo-authoritarians that threw him in a German prison in the first place and for their colleagues in the United States. Just last month, after a podcast appearance with Jake Shields, Germar was arrested again by New York authorities, obviously as payback for practicing free speech and critical thought. And during his time in police custody, he was abused by the cops, who also allowed him to be physically assaulted by other inmates, again, because this is the type of punishment that awaits thought criminals. But now Germar is free once again, and no one has been able to shut him up. So for more discussion on all of this and for more information on the truth about the Holocaust and the long-running campaign to kill that truth, we're now joined here once again on the Stu Peters Show by our good friend Germar Rudolph. Sir, thank you so much for coming. We always appreciate you making the time for us.
Yeah, much appreciated to be on your show.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you appreciate being free as well. I want to start with that because a lot of viewers are going to be wondering, and there's been speculation on X, as well as, you know, through private conversation that I've had with people like Jake Shields. Did your recent incarceration have anything to do with your work on exposing the lies surrounding the Holocaust?
On the surface of it, it looked like initially it wasn't. The case is an old one. It's 2.5 years old, and it was about me being present at a playground at night, or rather very early in the morning, when it's claimed that I wasn't supposed to be there. It was just a summary charge, so that's kind of like a speeding ticket. And then the prosecution jacked up the charges to a misdemeanor. And well, as you know, prosecutors, defense lawyers always say, don't talk about it publicly unless the case is resolved. So because everything I say can and will be used against me. So I'm not going into the detail of this pending case right now. But what is interesting, and it is pertinent in this context, is when I went to the preliminary hearing where the prosecution presented the facts, and at the end it was about whether or not to be granted bail or should I be apprehended. The prosecutor, after laying out the case again or summarizing things, he also stated that I'm also an intellectual pervert because I'm the world's leading Holocaust denier and that I have been dodging the law in many countries, running first away from Germany, then to Spain, then to the United Kingdom, and then to the United States. Now, that's the exact sequence that I went from one country to another, however, not dodging the law. There was nothing illegal what I have been doing back in Spain or in the UK or the US, so there was already a misrepresentation. But more importantly, it is not obvious publicly accessible information, the exact sequence of countries where I've been. So I figured right there, first of all, it is political. That is exactly the way they portray me and why they go so viciously after me. And it is most likely that the prosecutor was briefed by the Department of Homeland Security, who is in charge of granting me or maintaining my permanent legal residency in this country. And this is obviously a move to try to get me sentenced and then be able to revoke my permanent legal residency in order to get me extradited or deported to Germany. Around the same time when this case happened, I had also applied for a German passport because my old one had expired. And I could not get a new one. The German authorities denied me a new passport. And then I found out that there are a number of arrest warrants out in Germany for the work I've been doing here in the United States, publishing literature on Holocaust skepticism, on research on that topic. When we got access to that material after discovery, I found out that the German authorities are basically sitting there and wait for me to be convicted again in the United States, so that the US authorities will then deport me and they can arrest me. So that was a series of background shenanigans when I realized, yeah, this is not about having been at 4 o'clock in a place where it is claimed I wasn't supposed to be, because usually that is handled with a slap on the wrist or a ticket, but not being arrested, thrown in prison, and revoked residency and being deported. So this is a clear overreaction with a political background.
Earlier today, we watched the inauguration festivities, the swearing in of our 47th president, Donald Trump. I'm in a different place because, you know, obviously I've been very vocal on a lot of the current geopolitical ramifications about an infestation and an occupation and the demonic grip that, you know, Jews have on our government, on our society, our unelected bureaucracies. And so I've been weighing in on a lot of this from a lot of different angles. Do you really just tend to focus on the Holocaust because you believe that it's one of the most pivotal, most critical, important underlying, you know, events that's used in order to gain the power and then the protection from criticism or questioning that it would take for one or one group of people to subvert nations in the way that Jews have?
I would say I've focused on that the past 35 years, and it got me so much in trouble. I have a lot and plenty, if not too much, on my plate already. I don't want to chip into other political or societal issues. I know that the Holocaust narrative coming from Germany, particularly for German society, is of enormous importance. But having lived in other countries, I understand that it is of importance, of societal and political importance, for other countries as well. But I don't think I need to actually weigh into any of these issues with my own points of views. Once I manage to get people to rethink the Holocaust narrative and realize how things have been distorted, exaggerated, and invented on that level, then they become skeptical, they become open-minded pretty much about everything else too. So it's kind of the cork in the bottle that stops thinking freely. Once the cork is out, the path is free for everyone to think without taboo, without self-censorship, and to resist censorship from above. So I don't need to weigh into any other topics.
Do you talk about this content or this topic with, you know, just everyday people that you come into contact with?
Not normally, no. My stuff is out there on the internet, holocaustencyclopedia.com, holocausthandbooks.com. If people want to find out about it, they can search for it, they can look for it. And from the professional side, the companies that actually produce and maintain those websites.
Yeah, the reason why I ask if you have these conversations with just normal everyday people is because I kind of want to get your reading on the temperature gauge here for how willing people are to actually start digesting this information. Because, you know, when you start talking about the Holocaust, people just shell up. They panic. Right. They look at you like they just cannot believe that you're questioning, you know, these so-called atrocities.
I've gotten in a lot of social trouble by being open-minded and vocal about it. So I usually stay away from it in my personal life to have calm waters in my immediate social environment. So I usually don't rock the boat in my personal life because people are getting offended, even though I have not pushed the topic too much. But if people ask me, if someone finds out about my background, then I do speak about it. And that can already then be too much for others overhearing a conversation, that they start backstabbing me or trying to get me thrown out of this group of people or that. So it's not a pleasant thing to experience over and over again. So I usually stay away from it in my private life.
In all of your research, you've uncovered a lot of lies. We've talked about some of the big lies on this program before, some of the humorous lies, some of the lies that just kind of leave you boggled in your mind, like how could people actually believe that any of this was possible to begin with? And then you start to question the intellect of most people who are just walking around amongst us every day. But when you're looking at modern times right now, and I know that you don't necessarily care to weigh in on this all of the time, specifically in your personal groups, but here for the purpose of, you know, our audience's education, when you look at the history and everything that you have compiled here, I mean, and by the way, holding it up on television, I've noticed does not do it justice to, I mean, how big and how well-researched the Holocaust Encyclopedia actually is, and holding a physical copy, I believe, is very important for people. Are you noticing any warning signs of cyclical trends? The language that was used, the set of occurrences or events that allegedly transpired that you've now debunked and proven have been complete mythical lies. Have you seen any of that starting to kind of be recycled and used in modern day times to distract people and to get people really on the opposite side of that wall, that impenetrable wall of questioning or criticizing people due to the victimhood narrative?
Yes. I mean, the gas chamber narrative, if you look historically, it was invented during the First World War. There was Allied propaganda published in the British newspaper Telegraph, claiming that the Austrians have gassed thousands of Serbians in Serbia, Serbs in Serbia, anyway, in a church. It was the first time that something like that came up, and it was then recycled in the Second World War by the same newspaper, one of the very first messages that back in the First World War, the claim was that a total of 700,000 Serbs had been mass murdered. And then the same newspaper in 1942, 43, I think, wrote about 700,000 Jews had been murdered by Germans in gas chambers. This time they spoke about mobile gas chambers. Now, if you look in 1991, 1992, right there it is, yes, we have the first war against Iraq, and in that context, Jewish groups spread Jewish outlets. It was response the periodical of the Samuel Wiesenthal Center and the Jewish Press, a weekly Jewish newspaper, both spread the claim that the Iraqis were preparing Zyklon B gas chambers in Iraq to mass gas Jews, with the help of German companies who would provide them with the material for that. That was, of course, a complete lie, recycled from the First and the Second World War to justify the war against Saddam Hussein. And we have seen over and over again in conflicts, we have seen that in Syria, we have seen that also in the Iraq war, later in the second one, claims that the leaders there would use poison gas to gas this or that minority, which later have turned out to be untrue or distorted or whatever the case may be. So this story of gassing people in masses in order to incite war hysteria, to steer up to war or justify war, has been with us in the 20th century over and over again. So it was, of course, extreme during the Second World War, but it stuck with us because it was the most atrocious war with the most atrocious propaganda and the most atrocious devastation of an entire continent, basically. Not just Germany, but Europe in general was devastated by it. And there needs to be a quote-unquote justification for it. So this propaganda stuck around with us, making it look like it was a justified war because it was a war against gas chambers. And if you could take the gas chambers out of that equation, that war doesn't look that good anymore.
Yeah. You know, the gassing narrative has been something that has been used for quite some time. Bashar al-Assad was using chemical weapons against his own people. We had the red line in Syria during the Obama administration. So many people remember that was a big, huge lie. And then we've talked about events of wars. More current times, a lot of people have heard the ghost of Kyiv, you know, incubator babies, maternity wards. And anytime that you can get children involved, it seems that that's when you really get the attention of the people. It's a forbidden topic at that point. They'll do anything and support any efforts that are, you know, carried out in the name of protecting children, when in fact, children have not been victimized largely. And in your Holocaust encyclopedia information research gathering phase, and in all of your continued work, there were a lot of atrocities that were allegedly carried out against children. What have you found about what the Germans did to children during the time of the so-called Holocaust?
Well, the unfortunate truth is that families as a whole were deported and put into camps. But if you look at the documentation we have about Auschwitz, where most of the families from Hungary, from France, from Belgium, and the Netherlands were deported, you see that Auschwitz-Birkenau had a family camp where families were kept together, in particular mothers with children. And they were then allowed to have a school and kindergarten there. And they even had a maternity ward where children were born and proper registered. So one of the most well-known propaganda cliches is that children, in particular twin children, were used and abused by Josef Mengele for his experiments, and then were subjected to cruel experiments and were killed. When in fact, if you look at the documents, that the twins that Josef Mengele took under his wing, so to say, most of them, as we can trace, survived. The survival rate of the twins that Josef Mengele used for his anthropological research and twin research had a much higher survival rate than other children or other inmates in that camp. And the most common reason for death in Auschwitz was epidemics. And Josef Mengele actually protected his children and gave them a much, much better chance of surviving, and there is not a physical trace of any cruel experiments having conducted with them.
Well, we definitely do have physical traces of cruel and unusual medical penalties and death and torture being carried out right now at the hands of Tony Fauci and the occupied American government. By the way, Tony Fauci receiving a preemptive pardon by Joe Biden on his way out this morning. I don't really know if preemptive pardons are anything that would hold up in a court of law. We have Guillermo Rudolph with us. Go to HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. Again, HolocaustEncyclopedia.com to get your copy. We're going to have him more. We're coming back after the break with more from Guillermo Rudolph in a fascinating conversation.
As Christians in a Christian country, we have a right to be, at minimum, agnostic about the leadership being all Jewishly occupied.
We literally should be at war with fucking Israel 100 times over, and instead we're just sending them money, and it's fucking craziness.
Look at the state of Israel, look at the state of Tel Aviv, and look at the state of Philadelphia. You tell me where this money's going. You tell me who's benefiting from this.
I am prepared to die in the battle fighting this monstrosity that would wish to enslave me and my family and steal away any rights to my property and to take away my God. Go fuck yourself. Will I submit to that?
And if you've got a foreign state, you've got dual citizens in your government, who do you think they're supporting?
God, right now, would you protect the nation of Israel and protect those of us, not just our church, but every church in the world and in this nation that's willing to put their neck on the line and say, we stand with them.
You can look at Trump's cabinet. You can look at Biden's cabinet. It's full of Jews.
Black friend in school. I have nothing against blacks. She has nothing against me. She understands where I'm coming from.
Excuse me, I'm a Jew, and I just like to say that, you know, in our Bible it says that you're like animals.
The Jews crucified our God.
Very few historical events have taken root in public consciousness like World War II. And of course, no aspect of its remembrance has become more central than the Holocaust. Daily current events are framed within its legacy. Countless articles and propaganda films and books and documentaries and memorials are dedicated to ensuring the world never forgets the Holocaust. Yet, despite the untold sums cumulatively invested by powerful entities to keep this narrative at the forefront, finding authoritative and systematically presented information on the subject remains surprisingly difficult. Why? In a time where skepticism about pretty much everything that we have ever been taught is so rampant that even debates that were thought to be settled millennia ago have reemerged, one would think that the Holocaust, a narrative that is so sacrosanct to the establishment that it's become something of a new religion, whose orthodoxy is so enshrined and held so sacred that the questioning thereof is actually criminalized in many places around the world, that we would have some semblance of a scholarly foundation upon which its altars are built. Some sacred text that its devotees could bolster their faith with, solace themselves with the promise of when the Holocaust heathens rage. But yet, in spite of repetitive assertions that it's the single most well-documented atrocity in all of human history, in all of the thousands of works on this topic, even the most prestigious and celebrated among them are woefully lacking the hard data needed by inquiring minds to navigate the complexities of World War II history. How is it possible that you can go to jail in some countries for so much as just questioning the official death toll at Auschwitz? Yet all of the books that one might turn to in order to fact-check these figures, they read more like a morbid catechism than a compendium of actual factual data from which the official narrative could be quickly and easily verified. How many courageous scholars over the years have addressed this elephant in the room at great personal cost? Well, now we have something. Now we have the Holocaust Encyclopedia, the world's first truly and comprehensive an unconstrained encyclopedic work on this embattled topic that offers an unbiased and thoroughly critical analysis of the Holocaust narrative from A to Z. Meticulously researched, examined forensic evidence allows you to now challenge the widely accepted beliefs surrounding the events of this dark chapter in human history. It invites readers to explore all of the facets of the Holocaust, including overlooked and viciously suppressed perspectives, while fostering an atmosphere of open inquiry that strives to leave no stone unturned or historical document unexamined. Go to HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. Everything from cremation propaganda, absurdities and lies, historical persons, instruments camps, legal documentation, locations, manipulation, of course. HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. If you put in Stu Likes Books at checkout, you'll get 15% off. HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. Use the promo code Stu Likes Books at checkout for 15% off.
What are you doing today to refocus, realign your investment so that it matches your ethics, your American Christian-based value views? At Cortez Wealth Management, we want to create a solution that we can avoid the CBDC, can help you with your retirement, get you a reasonable rate of return, not fund China or any other communistic countries, and number five, work with a God-fearing fiduciary that has your best interest and that we can honor God, country, and family.
So many people celebrating today as we watched the inaugural installation earlier today. We're watching all of the festivities continue. We had a Jewish rabbi pray first over Donald Trump. Of course, we all know what it takes to become a Jewish rabbi. Then, of course, we had a black. You know, it's impossible to get away with anything that is solemn and somber and sincere and genuine when you hand a black a microphone and a stage and an audience on national television. The prayer certainly was not about God. And then, of course, we had this, what looked like to be a transgender Catholic priest, looked like a lesbian woman. No mention of Jesus Christ, by the way. Did you notice that? No mention of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, the King of Kings, during the entire inaugural ceremonies this morning. Go to HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. Again, HolocaustEncyclopedia.com. There is where you will find the Holocaust Encyclopedia. You can find the digital version, of course, which is available online. You can also do what I did, which is to get yourself the actual physical copy of the Holocaust Encyclopedia. We have talked ad nauseum over and over and over again about all of the various different atrocities that actually do take place today, and the way that our nation has been completely subverted, subjugated, occupied, is now controlled. The most powerful man in the United States, despite what the TV might tell you, is not Donald Trump. It is Benjamin Netanyahu. The rumors about Trump and Netanyahu not getting along, I don't know. But Miriam Adelson certainly gets along with Donald Trump to the tune of $100 million to pay for this presidency. And you know that she'll be damned if she doesn't get her shekels worth. Also, during this inaugural ceremony this morning, earlier, what we did not hear first and foremost was about how President Trump, upon leaving that podium and getting into the presidential motorcade and off to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to sit behind the desk in the Oval Office, that his first order of business would be to immediately pardon and free every single prisoner of war that is being held on U.S. soil as a result of the kill box setup that the feds and the intel apparatus put into place on January 6th. We did not hear these things. There are a lot of things in this Holocaust Encyclopedia that you probably have not heard. In the first part of our conversation with Germar, I mentioned, you know, when you go out in public and you start mentioning things that are, you know, not really socially acceptable or don't necessarily fit into the social norm, one of those topics, one of those things just happens to be the Holocaust, where 6 million Jews were gassed, systematically murdered, the evidence was totally destroyed, and then the Germans just admitted to all of it. Yep, we did all of that. Mathematically, it doesn't seem possible. Mathematically and scientifically, it seems impossible. And Germar has been using his scientific background to compile all of the writings in the Holocaust Encyclopedia. Is with us again now. Thank you for staying with us. How long did it take you to compile all this information? And is this a living and breathing encyclopedia?
Well, I have 35 years of research and publishing activity. So it took me 35 years to publish and edit and gather and wrap my head around all this information. And then I had reached the point where I had enough knowledge to sit down and write it. And that was a unique enterprise. I worked kind of 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I got it done within 5 months. So it was relatively fast, but it was coming all together after 35 years of doing research in that field. By the way, we have a relatively big success with that encyclopedia, to some degree also to your show, because you have been mentioning it so generously and frequently. We have sold almost 2,000 copies by now. If you consider that specialty encyclopedias usually are bought only by mid-sized and larger libraries, that's the main market for encyclopedias like that. And not a single, well, that's not true. Two libraries have bought it, but other than that, libraries don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So we market it directly to the end consumer, and they are loving it. We get a lot of feedback of people actually sitting down and reading it cover to cover, because there's so much new information, mind-boggling information in it. Every single entry kind of blows your mind, and you keep going. And I have a lot of people who couldn't believe it. They sit down and read an encyclopedia cover to cover. But that's what's happening. So we are breaking through the walls of censorship and social blockade that we otherwise encounter everywhere. And hopefully this is going to continue, Because with this tool in hand, you have the carapace to take it to face the enemy.
I tell people all the time that one of the first reading assignments that they should give themselves when they're looking into all of this is to read the Talmud. Now, if you want to know who these people are and what they believe in, then go and read what they actually believe in. If you really want to know the truth about the go ahead.
The Talmud is a massive work, and reading the Talmud is not really possible. It fills shelves. But there are summaries of the Talmud that boils it down to the essence. And actually, the company that also published the Holocaust Encyclopedia has a book out on that topic that is called The Book of the Shulchan Aruch, which is a compilation of the most important and essential laws of the Talmud. That was published in the 1500s by a Rabbi Caro, if I'm not mistaken. And the book we have about this compilation of the Talmud, the condensation of the Talmud, analyze it with regard to how Jews behave toward non-Jews. What are their rules and regulation and laws as to how to act and behave toward Jews? And this is a very important thing. So such a book, it can be read, that's just 200 pages. Whereas if you want to read the Talmud, that's tens of thousands of pages, if I'm not mistaken. So if you go to the condensed version and analysis of it, that's the way to do it.
I have a feeling that some of the things that you find in this condensed version, by the way, are some of the, I mean, you won't need to read anything more.
That's right.
Once you have an understanding of some of the core principles of these people, looking deeper would only be a real bother to anybody who has a soul or has values that are morally upright.
Correct.
What are some of the biggest takeaways that you think people have found from the Holocaust Encyclopedia? You said that thousands of them, to your knowledge, have been ordered. A lot of people are very excited about it, reading it cover to cover. What are people giving you as far as feedback as to some of the most shocking things that they had never known because they didn't have access to it until now?
Well, the encyclopedia, the way our alphabet is organized, starts with the entry absurd claims. And I think we have talked about it, too. You start opening it and there is pages upon pages of absurd claims that are revealed. And it has reference then to the individual entries where you can read more about it. And this is kind of a big bang to start an encyclopedia on the topic with. And I was actually, a little anecdote, I was in New York in prison for a little over 2 weeks waiting to be extradited to Pennsylvania, coming back to my little prison experience over the holidays. And with me was an inmate who was into reenacting World War II, and he was interested in German history because of that reenactment. And he found out that I had published this, and then he wanted me to come up with a list of what I could remember of these absurd claims. And I told him a number. And he wouldn't stop harassing me for more of these absurd claims and more and more. So this is kind of a very entertaining and mind-blowing way of starting the journey of discovery into the absurdities and grotesque claims on the Holocaust, and with references to more reading inside the book. And that is probably what, when it comes to feedback, what the most exciting part of it is. It's also the very
I've read first. A few of these to our audience before. And I mean, I just tell you, page one, these are the absurd claims. And I'll just give you a couple of them. Jewish children used by Hitler Youth for target practice. Okay. Wagons disappeared into a depression in the ground, into an underground crematorium at Auschwitz, forcing prisoners to lick the stairs clean and collect garbage with their lips. An SS father skeet shooting babies thrown into the air while his 9-year-old daughter applauds and shrieks, "Daddy, do it again. Do it again, Daddy." How do people make this stuff up, Girmar? How does one think of these things, skeet shooting a child as her SS father throws Jewish babies into the air? How sick do you have to be to think of something like that?
Tremendously sick. It is even more sickening that a lot of people think Well, what refutes this claim? The SS, in most people's minds, was so evil that they believe that they would have done that. This is a double absurdity. And I can't wrap my head around people who invent this stuff. And I can't wrap my head around people who believe anything that's being said to be true. So it requires a liar. It requires two parties for this to succeed. It requires the liar, and it requires the person who believes those lies.
Injections into the eyes of inmates to change their eye color. Artificially fertilize women at Auschwitz and then gas them. Torturing people in specially mass-produced torture boxes. Smacking people with special spanking machines. I've heard a lot about these spanking machines. I want you to talk a little bit about what you found about the lampshades and the soap, if you don't mind.
Yeah. The soap story basically originates also in the First World War, where a claim was made that Germans would use the corpses of their own soldiers to make soap of it. That was a propaganda invention of the British Psychological Warfare Department. And that was resuscitated during the Second World War. This time, it's not said to have been Germans or German soldiers used for that, but the corpses of Jews murdered in the camps. That was a story that has been bandied about for decades until finally, roughly around the time also when they corrected the Auschwitz figure down from 4 to 1 million, which is still a factor 10 too high. They also came out officially saying it never happened. Soap was never made out of Jews. That came from Israel, the Yad Vashem Center themselves.
But they just continue to propagate this story as if it is true, as if it were always
there are
true.
There are still people out there, Jewish intellectuals, or quote-unquote intellectuals, and who still claim, there's nothing that refutes that it happened, therefore it does happen. There is a core kernel of, I wouldn't say truth, but there is a reason for this story. The Russians found at the Danzig Institute for Anatomy soap-like material that they presented at the IMT as proof. What it turned out to be, the professor of the Anatomical Institute who at the end of the war, as any anatomical institute, some people donate their bodies to research and they end up in medical research facilities. And some of them, the skeletons are being used for educational purposes. And in this context, if you remove all the soft tissue from a skeleton, the process results in something like soap from the body fat. And it looks like at the end of the war, supplies have been broken down. The Institute didn't have any hygienic supplies anymore. And they may have used some of that soap for emergency ways of cleaning stuff. That's the background. The investigations were shelved after it turned out what is the truth. Has nothing to do with murder, has nothing to do with Jews, has nothing to do with any evil intention. But that's all the background there is. Everything else is invented. The same with lampshades. The story goes that the wife of the Buchenwald camp commander Koch used to go around the camp and look up inmates that had nice tattoos and would then tell some SS guard to kill him, to extract the skin and turn the skin into various objects, handbags, lampshades for household items that they claimed to have had at their home. That claim already made the rounds during the war. It's not quite clear whether it was Allied propaganda or inmate propaganda. And the SS internal judiciary system investigated that themselves. They had Erich Koch arrested and his wife investigated. They searched their house and everything, and they didn't find anything. There was no trace of anything confirming that. Koch was eventually executed by the SS himself for corruption embezzlement of inmate property and possibly murdering inmates in order to prevent to have any witnesses for that. So the SS internal judiciary was going after SS men. They were abusing their power in the camp to commit crimes that happened during the war. But there was no trace whatsoever about Lemshapes having ever existed. The Americans, after the war, put up a table with items that they claimed they found in the Buchenwald camp, made a big propaganda movie out of it, had the residents of the Weimar, of city of Weimar, which is near the Buchenwald camp, go through the camp, and they forced them to look at these exhibits that included a lampshade of unknown origin, two shrunken heads claimed to have been inmates. At further investigation, turned out they were exhibits from an anthropological museum that were from indigenous people from South America. They have all the exhibits on that table have completely disappeared. So the Americans used that for a propaganda movie, and then they let these exhibits tracelessly disappear. Later, when anything was found with skin, it turned out that the material of any lampshade they could locate was made of goat skin or any other animal skin, had nothing to do with humans. So no background there of any verifiable truth either.
Hitler has a pretty large section of the Holocaust Encyclopedia. I was just looking into a little bit of that. We're going to get into some Hitler stuff on the other side of the break. Hang on for 2 minutes and 55 seconds. We'll be right back with more from Guillermo Rudolph. The Holocaust Encyclopedia is available now at holocaustencyclopedia.com. Go and get yourself a physical copy. We'll be right back. So January is upon us. It's already 2025. Can you believe it? So I got to ask, how are you doing with your New Year's resolutions? Mine was easy. Mine was to focus on my well-being, and we all know that the foundation of well-being is a good night's sleep. If I could do just one thing to improve my sleep and overall well-being, it would be taking the number one mineral for that. And this mineral also helps me personally on so many levels that I can't even fully describe them. And I'm talking about magnesium. I'm talking about the magnesium breakthrough by Bioptimizers. You've heard me talk about it on the program multiple times. The 7 different forms of magnesium in this supplement are involved in over 600 different biochemical reactions in your body. Pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded when you take magnesium, from the quality of your sleep to your brain function, from metabolism to stress levels. And let's face it, even if your 2025 resolution is not to focus on your health as mine is, how are you really going to achieve all of your goals without quality sleep and stress management support? Really? So do yourself a favor. Make Magnesium Breakthrough part of your daily routine this year so that you can get the vitality that you need to conquer your dreams. Go to buyoptimizers.com/Stu Peters right now. Enter the promo code Stu Peters. You'll get 10% off any order. And if you subscribe, not only will you get amazing discounts and free gifts, you'll make your monthly supply a guarantee. Again, that's buyoptimizers.com/Stu Peters, buyoptimizers.com/Stu Peters, and use the promo code Stu Peters at checkout.
Are you using your phone, or is it using you? Rise above mass surveillance and discover a phone that protects your privacy and communications.
Above Phone does everything your old phone does, without tracking you, while giving you complete control over your phone and apps. We are better than big tech. It works with any cell service. No forced logins. No advertising or tracking. Download apps privately. Control your phone and its apps with secure hardware. Introducing Above Suite. Includes a VPN, private email and calendar, private chats, video calls, internet phone, and a search engine. Don't worry if you're new. Every phone includes a free 45-minute live call. You also get free email and chat support, free guides, and video courses. You have the power.
Rise above with Above Phone.
AbovePhone.com.
flawless. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Everybody is so consumed, really, just very tuned in to all of the inaugural events and everything that is happening today. We choose to get into more of the truth about what's actually happening today and the reasons why. When you have conversations with people about the Holocaust, their eyes just, they shudder, they run, they become fearful, they shut down, they zip their mouths, they crawl into a corner, they run away, they shame you, they ridicule you, they chastise you, they even throw you in jail in some countries, like where Guillermo Rudolph originates from in Germany. Obviously, if he were there now, I believe he would be in jail. Actually, I mean, if you were in Germany right now, would you be in jail?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They arrest ones out for me. And yeah, they try everything to put me in prison and throw away the keys.
And that is for the crime of what specifically?
For the crime of not taking at face value the official narrative of the Holocaust, but investigating it with 35 years of thorough forensic and archival research and publishing 53 volumes, plus now the encyclopedia on this topic, which has made this topic the best documented event in history. It wasn't so far, but with the research we have put in and published with the 53holocausthandbooks.com, that now is the case, but it does not line up with the official narrative that is almost exclusively based on anecdotal material, on witness accounts, on claims, rumors, hearsay, and the rest of it.
I'm holding the Holocaust Encyclopedia now. Many of our viewers have probably noticed that it has been sitting on my desk since I got it, and I have gone through a lot of it, unlike some of your fanatical readers and information digesters. I have not had the time to read it cover to cover yet. I definitely intend to do that. But when I'm doing research, I often now times go to the Holocaust Encyclopedia, and it's proven to be very effective. I mean, these citations are proven without any kind of speculation on your part. I mean, this isn't you saying, I don't believe this happened, here's my summary of events. This is you actually going and finding physical evidence, factual evidence, maps, historical documents, and things like that, and saying, hold on a second, that's all a lie. Is that right?
That is correct. It's not about opinion. It's about documented facts and about physical evidence.
And if the facts hurt your feelings, I'm sorry. Another subject and another person in our history, probably one of the most lied about men in human history, Adolf Hitler. When you talk about Uncle Adolf, as many call him, people shut down. They run away. They don't want to hear about Hitler. They don't want to talk about Hitler. He's demonized as, I mean, the ultimate villain. He's responsible for giving the order for the final solution at Auschwitz. What do you know about that? Because I want to talk very briefly. We don't have a lot of time, but I have two questions about Hitler for you that I feel are very important in your findings and the research that you have done here. Talk about the final solution and the alleged order that Hitler had given at Auschwitz to exterminate all of these Jews.
There is no trace of any order. So that's, in a nutshell, the result of it. There have been a lot of mainstream scholars claiming there was an order, but they've by now come to the conclusion there is no paper trail whatsoever indicating that Hitler ever ordered anything like what they call a final solution in terms of mass murdering the Jews. It just isn't there.
So it's just made up. What about the trials that took place at Nuremberg?
Well, if you look at the actual defendants at the Nuremberg trial, the statements they made, they all said, we didn't know that it was happening. And after a documentary, quote unquote, a documentary had been shown, showing scenes of piles of corpses in German camps. And then after the testimony of Rudolf Höss, a lot of the defendants came to conclude, well, it seems to be true after all, even though we didn't know it was going on. Now, the interesting part is exactly the testimony of Rudolf Höss, who is the former commandant of the Auschwitz camp. He was apprehended by the British in early 1946, if I'm not mistaken. And
he didn't undergo any torture at all, and he wasn't told exactly what to say at the trial.
The people who tortured them bragged about it after the war and have written books about it. For 3 days uninterruptedly, they tortured him. So we know it from his own mouth, but we know it all from the people who tortured him. So we have a detailed history of 3 days of torture and how it was done and how the quote-unquote confession was extracted from him, as he wrote later. I don't know what the content of this confession is, because I had been force-fed alcohol. I was completely drunk and I hadn't slept for 3 days, and they had been beating and mistreating me for 3 days. So he had no idea what he signed. And after that, he was a broken man, and he was constantly under threat of more torture and abuse. And he sang like a bird, repeating whatever the Allied wanted to hear from him. And later he was extradited to Poland, and the same story there. So in any court of law and in any proper scholar's mind, this evidence is not admissible. If it proves anything, it proves the opposite. If you have to use that kind of torture to quote unquote extract the truth from a person, then it is obvious that you have a problem, that you have a weak stand. Now, we know from wartime documents, Rudolf Hess has led a number of meetings at Auschwitz where the top shots of the German concentration camp administration came together to plan the camp. And right in the crucial moment where, according to the mainstream, the camp was gearing up and being equipped with mass murder facilities, we had one of these meetings, and the meeting minutes survived, where they internally, secretly had a detailed discussion of what the plans are. And the plans are very clear: expanding the camp, getting more and more housing to accommodate tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, and making them work for the war effort and make sure that the conditions are so that their productive output is maximized, so that they're actually fit and in good health. That's all there is to it.
One other question that I had about Hitler here is there any truth to the allegations that Hitler was actually a Jew or a crypto Jew, or that Hitler was acting on behalf of the Jews, or that he was somehow controlled or subverted by Jews?
I have not found any reliable information pointing in this direction, though. And truth told, I don't give a rat's ass. I want to give you an example of what Adolf Hitler was. In the late 1930s, the Germans discovered Nerf gas, Tabun. A Nerf gas, as we know it today, is a chemical that kills you within seconds. Very small amounts of you shut down your nervous system and kills you within seconds. It's a million times more effective than the gas they are said to have been used in Auschwitz to kill the Jews. They invented that chemical in the late 1930s, and the Western allies or any other nation had no knowledge that this stuff existed, and caught up with the Germans chemically only in the 1950s. So the Germans were then starting to mass produce Tabun having a lot of artillery shells produced and stored with this material underground, safe from air attack and everything else. They had the middle of the war, and particularly at the end of the war, they had a stockpile that would have been enough to kill every nervous creature on the planet many times over. They had also the rocket artillery to deliver it everywhere in Europe. In 1944, when the front, particularly in the East, was collapsing, the question came up from the German generality, from the German generals, to stop the Soviets by using this weapon to wipe out Moscow, Leningrad, and everything else with a number of V-2 and V-1 rockets and win the war in the East. Hitler put his foot down and said, no, we'd rather go down in history as the people who are not vicious mass murderer. We'd rather lose that war than committing an atrocity of mass murdering people with gas. There you have Adolf Hitler. He has gone through the First World War, the gas trench for, and he was completely opposed to ever using gas to mass murder people. And that was throughout the war the case. These stockpiles of Tabun gas was actually created in order to retaliate should the Allies start a gas warfare. They actually had the plan. The Americans came with a ship full of the old World War I style, not very effective gas munitions, docked a ship in somewhere in Italy, and Germans found out about it, didn't know that it was gas, but knew that it had some munition in it. They bombed the ship, and it led to a massive release of this poison gas in that Italian harbor and killed a lot of people. And after that, the Allies were caught with their pants down, that they were gearing up to gas warfare at that point. I think it was in 43. And that stopped them from actually going ahead with it. That stopped a massive gas warfare. Had the Allies started a gas warfare, the Germans would have retaliated with chemicals that are a million times more effective, and they had the rocket artillery to wipe out London with just a few rockets. They never did it because Hitler said no.
These things, when you hear them, and then you read about them, and then you look at the physical evidence that supports everything that Germar just said, and if he were in Germany right now, he would be locked up for the crime of saying that. And when I asked you what your actual charges are, you gave your definition of what the charges are and why you would be locked up if you were in Germany for the crime of Holocaust denial. I don't know what they actually call it. Can you tell us, what do they actually call this? What are you actually wanted for? What's on your arrest warrant?
Incitement of the masses. That's a general term. If you stir up the people to form hostile feelings against any privileged minority. In that case, it's the Jews, but this law could be applied also against immigrants, against any kind of minority that is privileged. Now, in a very near future, Germans are going to be a minority in Germany, but they don't have the protection of already case law. Germans are not protected by any of this. It's only non-German minorities or non-German groups against discrimination of what type soever.
Talk about the seriousness of these European countries and how severe the punishment is for the crime of Holocaust questioning or denial.
Well, the pinnacle, the worst case is Austria. If you combine denying or contesting the Holocaust narrative with a call for Austria rejoining Germany, because Austria used to be for hundreds of years the core and heart of Germany. And then we had the dualism between Austria and Prussia battling over the dominance in Germany. Prussia won and Austria got kind of pushed out. But Austria has been the heart and soul of Germany for many centuries. Austria was a part, just like Bavaria, Saxony, and so there are different parts of Germany. And Austria used to be the part of Germany, the quintessential central core for centuries. It's not now anymore. And after the Second World War, the Allied made it clear with a special law in Austria that you're not allowed to do anything that is reactivating National Socialism. And lobbying for the unification of Austria with Germany is seen as part of it, which is nonsense. It's a matter of self-determination. If the Austrians want to join Germany, then they should be free to do so. But under that special Allied law, you go up to 20 years in prison if you do that. If you do that in combination with Holocaust denial, you can go to prison for 20 years. That's the worst case. The next one, I think there's one country that has 6 years. I think it's Italy, if I'm not mistaken. 5 years in Germany. So it trickles down. There are several countries that have 5 years. There are very few countries that do not have these laws. Spain, Ireland, a few countries in the Balticum, and so it's a much shorter list than those that do. Canada has a similar law. By now, it's up to 5 years, and you can even be arrested and put in prison without having done anything and without any trial in Canada with a so-called peace bond. If you have a reputation of opening your mouth and saying something that offends minorities, then they can preventively, to keep the public peace, put you in prison for up to 1 year, preventive custody for the sake of peace, graveyard peace. That's exactly the same kind of attitude that the National Socialists had during their attempt of quelling the crisis that Germany was in after the tumultuous post-war years after the First World War. They did away with a lot of civil rights and had protective custody, as they call it. Protective custody, not for the inmate, but to protect society from troublemakers.
We have talked about Austria, and we've talked about Germany, and we've talked about Canada. I want to talk about the United States. How concerned are you that similar laws will be enacted and carried out here in the United States?
I'm not very concerned that they use the penal law, because the First Amendment protection is pretty steep. They try everything to make your life impossible on the civilian level, on the economic front, with all kinds of authorities making it illegal for any government contract, local, regional, state, or federal, with anyone who has controversial views on that topic, or any controversial views on Jews. The umbrella term anti-Semitism, which is a misnomer. Anti-Judaism should be the proper one, because the most Semites are Arabs, so they're not Jews. But anyway, the different thing is what Donald Trump says, to use the judiciary to oppress political opponents by framing, by jacking up charges, irrational charges, by turning things into crime that shouldn't be crime. So circumventing the First Amendment free speech by dragging people who have opinions you don't like for trumped up charges in front of court and having them convicted, this is what is more likely to happen here. And this is what I see in my own case as well. As I mentioned initially, there's a massive political interest behind what's happening to me. And of course, Trump has said that about his own prosecutions over the past year. Now, I'm not privy to his details of this case, but I'm sure this is exactly what's going on, because prosecution in this country and in most countries is part of the executive branch, not the judicial branch. They're not independent. Whoever gets prosecuted is defined by those who are in power in politics. That's not right. So anyone who violates the law should be prosecuted. Nobody should be protected, because there is a powerful person in the White House or anywhere else who prevents that from happening. And nobody should be prosecuted because a politician wants it, even though there's no reason. But that's what's going on. That's going on to some degree or another in most countries. But I see that to gear up.
Donald Trump has said that he would advocate for the death penalty for anti-Semitism and thinks that you should be deported from the United States if you don't thoroughly support the Zionist state of Israel. Ernst Zundel knows a lot about this as well. Here we go. The chief right here was a German neo-Nazi publisher, is what he's known as in the Wikipedia. Okay. He was a pamphleteer of Holocaust denial literature. He was jailed several times in Canada for publishing literature likely to incite hatred against an unidentifiable group, and on charges of being a threat to national security in the United States. So could they just take the same approach and say that, well, you know what, Guillermo Rudolph and Stu Peters, they are threats to national security here in the United States? The underlying crime, of course, is Holocaust denial and questioning the official Orthodox narrative surrounding the Holocaust and Adolf Hitler et al., criticizing or questioning Jews, but can be used using other laws that are already on the books, like being a threat to national security or inciting hatred against an identifiable group.
That I've always been aware of the problem. If I were to get in touch with any group that is considered terrorist or supportive of terrorism, any of that kind of stuff, that they become very nasty with you. I've heard from people who had links to that got suddenly prosecuted, or you can get even arrested and locked away without due process. You know, we all know about Guantanamo Bay, people being locked up there for years, for decades, even without any charges ever being pressed, any trial ever being happening. So, and that's not the only place. I know that there are facilities within the United States where people are being kept without charges, and they are kind of secret detention centers. They do exist. And this is possible. There's definitely a possibility Again, it will not be a normal criminal charge because there's nothing on the books that says you can't say these things. The First Amendment guarantees that you can say these things. But if they can bring it in some kind of context of being in touch with the wrong kind of people, then it becomes a national security issue because it's terrorism. Then they can suddenly conceal the evidence. And basically, they can make up evidence claiming they have evidence. But since it's national security, they don't have to reveal it. And therefore, even if they have nothing at all, they can claim that they have evidence. But then, right, it's a shit show that can happen. That has happened to Anson while he was in Canada. And this is a frightening perspective indeed.
Agreed. Guillermo Rudolph, thank you so much for all of your work on the Holocaust Encyclopedia. Thank you for going through the sacrifices that you have made. We know that you're under persecution constantly. You're on the run. I mean, for giving people the valuable information that they need that they have been lied about for so many decades. It's now readily available. If you just go to holocaustencyclopedia.com, again, holocaustencyclopedia.com. And I will also say this, the great people over at Holocaust Encyclopedia have offered you, Stew Crew, a tremendous discount if you want to get the physical version of the Holocaust Encyclopedia and put it on your desk. Maybe you're one of those cover to cover readers. That would be great. This is a topic that, you know, I mean, should interest everybody because this is the event that is used time and time again, over and over and over again through decades of public humiliation and, you know, satanic sacrificial ceremonies, the ability to have open relationships and sex with kids, the control structure in our government, meddling in our political apparatus, controlling the intelligence apparatus, having their fingers on the levers of power for the military-industrial complex, the American war empire, trillions of U.S. taxpayer dollars. Where does it all come from? What do they use as a justification for all of it? This one event. So, of course, this is something that you want to read. And as I was getting to, the good people over at HolocaustEncyclopedia.com have offered you and Stew Crew a tremendous discount if you use the promo code StewLikesBooks. Go to HolocaustEncyclopedia.com, use the promo code StewLikesBooks for a big discount at checkout. This is the topic that we all really need to familiarize ourselves with. This event, and as Garamar was saying, once you start to peel back the onion layers on the Holocaust itself, you just only open the thirst and hunger and desire for people to know the truth about everything that they have been taught in all of these scenarios. These are God's chosen people. This is the Israel of the Bible. This is why we must bless Israel. Therefore, we will be blessed versus cursing and be cursed. Know the truth. HolocaustEncyclopedia.com, promo code StewLikesBooks.
AirWaterHealing.com is the leading manufacturer in filterless air purification systems. Whether you're dealing with pollen or mold or dust, shedding from your pet or vaccinated neighbors, mRNA spike protein shedding. AirWaterHealing.com has solutions for every scenario at home, at work, or on the go. Breathe with confidence. Don't let your air suck. Rest well knowing that your home is protected 24/7. So now you can get a unit for your home or a portable unit for on-the-go travel. That's airwaterhealing.com. Use promo code STEW for 10% off when you go to airwaterhealing.com.
A message for parents that love their kids and, of course, want to keep them safe and healthy. It's a health product that you can't ignore. Kids Z-Spike gummies from the Zeleco Labs Z-Stack supplement line. Now, these aren't just ordinary supplements. These are your child's shield against upcoming health threats and a recovery mechanism to help dissolve and block spike proteins. Of course, inspired by the legendary Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. Dr. Z didn't just practice medicine. As you well know, he changed the entire game over the pandemic. He provided counsel on the prevention and treatment of COVID-19, the bioweapon, and the removal of the dangerous and deadly spike proteins from the body. His pioneering work lives on in these gummies, crafted to repair and empower your kids' immune systems. Powerful stuff inside of these things, all based on solid research that you can trust by Zelenko Labs. Vitamin C and dandelion root. These help to cleanse and fortify. Of course, there's a whole lot of other things inside of these Z-Spike gummies as well.
Pomegranate, peel, and bromelain arm and defend against these invaders like the spike proteins that are wishing to enter your kid's body and destroy their health. Targeting those tricky spike proteins is difficult, but not if you have the Z-Spike gummies. All natural, zero artificial junk, low in sugar, and a strawberry flavor that your kids will actually want. This is about more than just avoiding colds. This is about giving your kids a proactive protection and repairing them from damage caused during the pandemic. As we know that there's shedding involved. And parents, they didn't leave you out. You can achieve the same goals for your health and body, pairing Dr. Zelenko's Hero Products, Z-Spike, and Z-Detox for daily support. Rise up and protect your kids with Dr. Zelenko's Kids Z-Spike Gummies, perfect for kids ages 4 and up. Head over to zstacklife.com/SPN and then use the code for 15% off. The code is SPN. Secure your bottles right now. They have subscriptions too. Remember, this isn't just a supplement, it's a shield. It's Dr. Zelenko's legacy. Shield up with Kids Z-Spike Gummies, the smart way to protect and heal our kids. zstacklife.com/SPN. Again, zstacklife.com/SPN. I'm going to ask you for your undivided attention because I'm going to tell you about what could possibly be the most important life-saving supplement that I have ever talked about. It's called Cardio Miracle. Each serving of Cardio Miracle has a combination of over 50 high-quality ingredients, including a huge variety of fruits, vegetables, amino acids, and herbs, all of which come together to promote your body's ability to produce nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is so important for heart health. It helps to relax and dilate your blood vessels, which supports blood flow and circulation. And I love that you don't have to take this giant pill to get all of this nutrition. No, Cardio Miracle comes in a powder formula, so it's really easy to mix all day throughout the day into juice or water and take it at any time. That also helps to support mood regulation because it's a neurotransmitter. It's a neuromodulator in the brain. So it can support the release of serotonin and dopamine, both of which are really important and involved in mood regulation. Cardio Miracle also supports mental clarity, sleep quality, energy levels. It can even help with recovery after exercise. Nitric oxide is essential for so many functions in the body, and Cardio Miracle supports the production of nitric oxide, so you get many benefits from just one supplement. Please go to highpowerheart.com. Again, highpowerheart.com. I'm telling you, this could quite possibly be the most important supplement that I will ever talk about. Cardio Miracle. Go to highpowerheart.com.